What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 10 of the Games with R&D podcast. My name's Garrett Anderson, and I think it's going to be a great show today because I'm wearing a Hawaiian t-shirt with seahorses on it. So that can only mean that it's going to be an awesome show. With me, as always, I have Roberto.
Hello.
And we have the spirit. The essence of Dantastic is in the room. I can smell the coffee breath. I can basically hear him talking about Final Fantasy XIV, but he's not with us today, so we miss him, we love him, and he'll definitely be back on the next show. But this episode, not only do we have one, but two special guests. The returning champion of the Games with R&D podcast, Vanessa!
Hey, everybody! Good to be back, guys. Good to be back.
And for the very first time, the infamous Kenny!
Hello.
Kenny has been spoken about in almost every podcast. We've been threatening to get her on the show, and now she's here. So we're all super excited about that. We're going to be talking about a whole bunch of stuff. We got a big banger. Basically, we're going to be getting to know Kenny a little bit more. We're going to find out what Roberto's been playing. We're going to be talking about Animal Crossing, and we're going to be talking about our thoughts on The Last of Us 2. So let's just jump right on in, and let's meet Kenny. Kenny, every time I come over, you're playing a different kind of game, which has always kind of like really impressed me. You were playing The Sims 4, you're playing open world action adventure games in The Witcher 3, now you're playing The Last of Us 2. So have you always been a broad gamer, or where did it all begin for you?
It began, so growing up, my dad had his old NES from when he was younger, so we always had that in the house. And so that was kind of what we grew up until we had a Dreamcast came out. So we played, was that awful, difficult, like, Star Wars game, but, like, other things that were fun. So we always grew up with that around the house. And then when we got the Dreamcast, we had, like, Echo the Dolphin, and we had the whole crazy taxi set up with, like, the steering wheel. So watching my dad play a lot of action games and bigger open world games, just kind of gave me appreciation for wanting to try to play different games.
Cool.
I tend to focus mostly what I enjoy playing. It's like turn-based kind of RPG styles and really narrative-driven stories. But I do enjoy like simulation sims and like farming games and things like that as well. But if a game seems interesting to me, I'm always willing to give it a shot to play it.
That's awesome. So you've never been one to like choose sides on consoles or anything like that? Because it sounds like if you had the NES and Dreamcast, you've kind of been just, you just go where the games are then?
Yeah, I will say we typically PlayStation is what we grew up with. Because the first console we bought out towards release was the PlayStation 2. So I've always had Nintendo handhelds and then PlayStations growing up. So I didn't really experience like Microsoft and playing like Xbox games till I really moved in with Roberto. And he had an Xbox 360 at the time. No.
One.
Xbox One. There you go.
That's cool. Yeah, you know, it's kind of good to have a wide berth of different games in your arsenal to kind of give you a bigger perspective on what's out there, because you're always, like, constantly being surprised by something that you didn't expect to enjoy. So that's really awesome. So I got to ask you, to put you on the spot, maybe just three of your favorite games of all time.
Three of my favorite games.
And I know that's really on the spot. I know it's really hard to do this.
No.
But what immediately maybe just comes to mind?
One of the games that I still go back to, and it's the only reason I still have a DS Lite so I can play it. Harvest Moon, it's more Friends in Mineral Town. It was the companion to A Wonderful World that was really popular on GameCube. So it was basically the handheld companion game to that. And it was cool because you had a choice. You could do Mineral Town or More Friends, so either the male or female protagonist. But there's just something so calming and relaxing about the game that I still pick it up. I'll still choose it over any sort of Harvest Moon game. I prefer it over Stardew Valley. I'll always go back to it continuously. Another one that I put in a lot of hours as a kid was Pokemon Sapphire. It was my first actual Pokemon game that I played. I had been into like collecting the Pokemon cards and watching the anime growing up. But I never had anything to play Pokemon of. So when I got my Nintendo SP, yeah. I think so, yeah. It was one of the first games I wanted. It was like a Pokemon game. So I went and picked up Pokemon Sapphire, and I played that original cartridge for hours and hours, and I just restart it and play again and play again. But as far as games that like I go back to, those are ones I really love. I tend to be kind of obsessive, so I'll play one game and I'll get so sucked into it and absorbed it. It's pretty much all I do and all I focus on for long periods of time. So it's gone through things like The Witcher recently. I didn't quite finish it, but I put in hours and hours and hours into it. Yeah. Persona 4 Golden was one when I first moved in with Roberto that I probably put 50 hours without touching anything else or doing any other hobby at the time.
I lost that Vita for a really long time.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, no, that's why I really like this panel is you know, the honest to God truth is, you know, I'm 38 and I've been playing games a long time, but I know nothing about Harvest Moon other than I know that, you know, Stardew Valley and that have always had this weird unspoken connection in some kind of way. And Pokemon, I just feel like I came way too late to the game for. You know, like I'm 38. So by the time Pokemon was the shit, excuse my language, I was too cool for school, right? I had looked at that in that time of my life as, oh, that's a kid's game. And so that was a really bad mistake on my end because now I just have these terrible holes in my gaming history. Vanessa, it has been way too long since we have checked in with you. I know you've been playing Animal Crossing.
Yes.
But what else have you been playing?
I think since the last time, let's see, I don't remember what episode I was on last time. Was it episode 3 or 4? But it was a while ago. I've been, you know, at the time, I think I said I was playing RuneScape. I'm still currently playing that, but not as much because Animal Crossing right now is taking a huge time. And just recently, a couple days ago, I came back to an old good classic on Steam because they're having a Steam summer sale on Steam, and I couldn't pass it up. And I went back and started replaying SimCity 4.
Ooh!
So I'm like on the cusp of getting hooked into that all over again right now. So yeah, basically Animal Crossing and SimCity 4 right now is what I'm playing.
Yeah, those are two really, like, involved games, to say the least. I don't know very much either about them, but I do know that you can easily lose yourself for hours and hours and hours in both of those games because they're, you know, so sim-based.
And the reason why I say, because I know there's a latest one out, it's like SimCity 5, but honest to God, I don't think that one's a lot better compared to the SimCity 4 one. I played SimCity 5, but there's a lot of bugs and issues with that. With they tried to do like multiplayer and like online stuff, and honest to God, it was more hassle than it was worth. Like connecting with people, like you could have random strangers come into your city, and I didn't like that. So it's just a lot more. I think they were just trying to do way too much. They were too ambitious, and I didn't like the whole like login thing in order to play SimCity 5. Like you have to have I think it was an Origins account.
Oh,
or
it's EA Origin. Yes. A lot of people do not like
that.
It's
awful.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, like it was just a bad experience on my part. So after that, I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna take a break from all the SimCity games. Cause that kind of ruined it for me when I played SimCity 5. Because I was expecting SimCity 4, but a better, more, you know, even
polished
more
experience.
Which I was drastically disappointed. I mean, it was more detailed in the sense where, like, you could click a tiny little person out of all these millions or thousands of people and follow them to their work, to where they're going. But SimCity 4, it's just, I don't know, it's just a classic. It's like...
It's one of those things for me. It's not always like, you know, they say quality over quantity. Right? More isn't always better. I would rather go to a 5-star restaurant and have very small a la carte meals than go to a buffet and eat cardboard. Because that's what a lot of food at buffets taste like. Cardboard. Nobody likes eating cardboard. Plastic's better than cardboard. Anyway, I digress. Roberto, what have you been playing?
Oh, I've been very boring, actually.
That's fine. Tell me about your boring life. Let me live through you.
I haven't really been playing games, truthfully.
It's fine.
I mean, you know, a few matches here and there of Overwatch and or Paladins. I've been watching a lot more anime.
Okay.
I started rewatching Demon Slayer again because I just love the look of the show, the style that they're going with, the action comedy that becomes very dark very quickly and then just go and changes back to that action comedy that I got used to, and just the story is just very good, very enriching, and that's one of the things that I've been really getting into again. And then I started watching. I keep forgetting the name of that damn anime. The Life of a Villainess, I believe it's what it's called. It's a slice of life, where this girl, I guess she died and came back to this different world, so it's an isekai style genre anime.
A what style? Excuse me?
It's what it means is that the hero or the heroine died in the real world and then were transferred to a different dimension to live in that world.
Wait a minute, that sounds very confusing. So there's more than one of these?
No, I'm just saying that a hero or a heroine.
I thought that like exact situation was an entire genre. I was like, wait a minute.
It is.
Wait a minute, what?
It is.
Yeah.
How? How many situations could there be that are different from each other? Or are they all the same, just with different characters and different...
There's a lot of complaints about the genre being very, very samey, but there are some that stand out that people really enjoy.
But you really do like enjoy the story and stuff? Is it like the narrative, voice acting?
This one,
like, what is it about?
So this one, it's this girl died, and then she figures out that, oh god, I'm in this dating simulator game, and I am the bad guy. And I've played this game so many times that I'm gonna die. And so she's trying to figure out how to survive the game as the bad guy. So she's trying to make friends with everyone, or, you know, she's trying to figure out how to learn better magic, or just be ready just in case she fails. And it's just a comedy. It really is. It's a fantasy comedy. When she finds somebody that, I remember this person. This person can actually kill me if I don't know what I'm doing. It goes into, like, her mindset, mind hive. And you see, like, different versions of her trying to talk to each other to figure out how they're going to go through this whole situation.
So it's like an Edge of Tomorrow kind of, like, situation
where she dies and
she comes back?
No. So she, just because she's played this game in her old life, she knows that she died, and then she's trying to, you know, trying to survive this through this game.
Wow.
But it's a ridiculous, I wouldn't say over the top, but it's just a funny comedy that I started enjoying because somebody recommended it to me at one of the little, because of this whole thing, we made like an anime club on Facebook. And so we're part of a group. Kenny and I are actually part of this group. And a friend of mine recommended this. I'm like, all right, I'll check it out. You know, he usually recommends some good stuff. So I've been checking that one out.
Do you guys watch your anime dubbed, or I mean, watch? Do you listen to it dubbed, or do you read
subtitles?
Subs. Thank you. Not subs.
No casuals.
Yeah. No casuals. Okay.
There's a few.
I'm on the same page with you guys. Yes, I like to have no English. No English. No English.
There's a few English dubs, like especially ones we grew up like I grew up with that I'll go back to. But for the most part,
there are exceptions to this rule. Like there's always an exception. Like Trigun or Code Geass.
Yu Yu Hakusho
is a good one for that. Soul Eater actually is another good one. Trigun. Yeah. Cowboy Bebop. So
late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
It just depends on where you're going for.
Lupin's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I mean, you can't always play video games, right? I mean, it's always good to take like a step back from a medium. I've definitely have burnt myself out in the past with specific mediums. I think comics is a really good example of that. You know, I used to read a comic every day on my lunch. I used to read 2 or 3 books a day, and I have really, and a lot of that is too because I just don't have the same amount of time as I once did. Now being, you know, father of almost a 2-year-old, and my time is limited. But I also don't regret that, like, because I think that sometimes taking a step back and not being so involved in whatever the latest thing is can kind of be liberating, you know, not having to feel like you need to be playing, reading, or watching, like, the latest thing that's going on. So, good for you, man.
I will update you guys on my Paladin quest, though.
Okay.
Ever since, so I knew this was going to happen. That once I started talking about me being getting good at that game...
Yeah, you were going pro, I thought.
You guys were saying I was going pro. I said no such thing. I started playing, or I got in a few games after that, and somehow matchmaking was like, you know what, we've been giving you too many easy matches, so we're going to throw you some curveballs. And I just kept, you know, just losing... match after match, and you know, I started getting back into it again, and I've been winning again. But it's just,
they were listening.
Oh, they were listening.
The gamer gods were like, Roberto, you are getting too big headed, sir. We are going to strike down.
Control that ego now.
Yeah, we're going to strike down upon you with great vengeance and furious anger. Oh boy, I wasn't going to go through that whole Samuel L. Jackson speech. That almost went off there. Yeah, so for me, I also fell victim to the summer sale on Steam. That was very unfortunate.
I've stayed away so far.
I have a bone to pick with Roberto.
I warned him.
And no, because I've been on the PS4, and I've been really bad about checking my emails lately. Don't judge me on my email checking. There's never anything good in there besides bills and other shit I don't care about. Anyway, so I didn't know about the Steam summer sale because I hadn't turned on my PC because for some reason I decided to drag my PS4 out of the garage. And so, anyway, I had no idea, and then Roberto comes strolling into work, "Hey, Garrett, did you see the Steam Summer Sale?" And I was like, instantly, I was like, "Steam Summer Sale! There's a Steam Summer Sale!" And then, so, I instantly check my email. Guess what it says? Steam sends me an email. 32 games in your wish list are on sale, Garrett. And I'm like, I hate you, Roberto.
Hey, but I will say, in advance, I warned him. I told him to be careful. The summer sale has started.
Yeah.
Watch your wallet.
No, but if you are listening, and I hope you are, because why would I be talking and asking if you're listening if you're not listening, go check out the Steam summer sale, because my gosh, there are some dang good, I mean, so many deals. It's unbelievable. Thousands of games.
Dude, BioShock is out right now for like
$5. $5 for BioShock. Brandon, I saw that.
Because my husband, he's really big on shooter games too. Anyway, he bought all three for, I think it was like $12.
That is, it's highway
it's
robbery.
Crazy.
It's highway robbery.
He's play them though, right?
Oh yeah. Okay. On console. For PC. For PC, it looks amazing.
Yeah, so, sure. Yeah, they've remastered it and everything, so it looks absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, I saw that. So yeah, I was like,
it's really good.
That's one of those games where I wish I could wipe my memory and play it again. But I digress. Off of BioShock, I only bought 5 games, only 5. Only? Which was pretty good for me. Well, I mean, put it this way. So, you know, just...
But you had 30.
We're going to be talking about The Last of Us 2. I just spent $60 on that game. I walked out of there with 5 games that I've been wanting for a very long time for like $30. Because I think if you spend $30, they give you additional $5 off
now. Which I already used.
So it's an incredible deal. Besides that, I did finish The Last of Us Remastered. I don't want to go too deeply into that because I think I kind of like said my piece mostly with that game on our last episode, but what I will say is after finishing it, I do believe that that game has the best introduction and also the best ending in a game ever. I don't know if I said that on the last show, but if I didn't, I really want to reiterate, I think that the intro to that game, and I am going to just go out on a whim, I'm sorry, this game is from 2013, you right away are given the feeling that you are powerless and everything is taken away from you in a way that a game has never made me feel. Like, yes, you're thrown into a lot of games, low powered, you have limited abilities, your health bar is low, you don't obviously have all the best weapons or gear. It's not even like that at all. It's just the biggest feeling I've ever felt of emptiness and sadness, so emotional and just driving. And then it ends in such a way that is just so jarring and so risky. I feel like Naughty Dog, they took a huge risk with the end of that game that could have ended so many other ways, and I think it's just so ballsy. And I think once again that narratively it's a turning point in gaming history, and I think that there'll be a bazillion other games that are willing to take risks after this. But I think without The Last of Us, you're not going to see the push forward that games needed narratively. So, if you still haven't played The Last of Us, and you're thinking about going into The Last of Us 2, I highly recommend playing that game, or at least watching the YouTube cutscenes, which I know some people do that, and I'm okay with that, but I still think that it brings a lot more weight if you do play through it. And no shame, you can play through the game on easy, relatively quickly. I actually did it that for the second time around, just so I could jump into The Last of the Two with the story in mind. So I don't want to talk any more of The Last of Us, because we are going to jump to The Last of Us 2. But first, we're talking about a game I know nothing about. I want to know about Animal Crossing. Now, I want you to speak to me as if I'm a 5-year-old child. Well, maybe don't, because that'd be that weird voice thing. You'd probably have higher... Now, Garrett, there's a farm and an island, and there's animals. I don't want maybe that level of talk down to me, but let's all start, and let's start with Vanessa.
Okay.
Tell me about what the hell is Animal Crossing?
Okay, so for a completely new person that has no idea what it is, the really interesting key point that I want to point out about this game is that it's in real time. So, not a lot of games do this. In fact, I really one that would actually do this effectively as much as Animal Crossing, but By real time, meaning you sign into the game. It is, tells you right there the time. It is 7:55. Oh, you check your time in real time. Oh, it's 7:55. It is evening. It is evening over here, too, in our world. It's, like, together. Real time. That's what I mean by real time, meaning it's exactly the same as it in there, as it in the outside here. So already, you're playing in real time, meaning the choices and actions you do in the game. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example. You're helping the museum curator, and he's like, oh, well, we're going to do some construction, but the building won't be ready till tomorrow. And when he says tomorrow, usually one tends to think, oh, okay, a couple hours, or go do something. No, it's an actual tomorrow. You have to wait. You can do something else on the island or whatever you want to do, but you actually have to wait for your actual tomorrow.
Oh, man.
And the cool thing about that, too, is that it syncs up to, like, real-life holidays and things like that. And they actually added in this game northern and southern hemispheres. So depending on where you live, you can make that selection so winter and summer will be reversed for you to match where you actually live in the world.
Okay, so I get it. So you're talking about real-time. Mm-hmm. Game guy says tomorrow. You gotta wait tomorrow. Now, I'm going to be really honest with you. Oh boy, how do I put this? To me, that sounds very daunting. I have a more broader question. What is it about? Like, what is there any sort of, like narrative? Like, hey, you're supposed to go to this island to do this thing? What's the setup to everything?
There is. The game kind of kicks you off with, like, I wouldn't necessarily list, like, a storyline, but it kind of prompts you with quests. So it'll be like, hey, we want to, you, so you start the game with, on this one particular, you start the game where you arrive on an island with two, what are called villagers. So there are two different animals that you arrive with. So it'll be like, okay, everyone picks a plot on your island where you want to pitch your tent to start the game. And then the next steps after that is gathering materials to build a house. And so the game kind of prompts you for the first, I don't know, week or two that you play with different things to get you established. And then after that, the game's like, you can do what you would like to do.
Okay. That's very Stardew. Yeah.
Yes.
It's, yeah. So how she was saying, like, you start off pretty slow. Like, you slowly acquire knowledge of these tools that, you're going to learn a flimsy axe. You're going to learn a flimsy fishing pole, you know? But as you start to develop the island and your world, you start to acquire higher technology, you know, better tools you can make, better stuff, better things. You can import stuff, you can buy stuff. And pretty soon you get to the level of, there's other villagers or people who are noticing your island. Like, hey, you know, what's this island? And you can actually invite them over to live on your island to make your island more renowned and prestigious and basically turn it from, like, a little deserted island of nothingness into, like, this huge, sprawling, like, metropolis, if you want to go that big, you know? It can, like, depending on how much energy you're willing to put into it day in and day out, literally day in and day out, you're gonna see huge results, you know? And at first, yeah, it, like, I think the reason why, I don't want to be, like, sexist or whatever, but, like, a lot of guys aren't that into it. Like, Brandon, he's, you know, my husband, he plays it here and there, but he's not, you know, as thrilled about it as I am, you know? And I don't know why, but I think it just has to do with, the tiny little details that it puts in, because, like, you can, like the clothing shop. Mm-hmm. There's so many tiny little details of the clothing shop. You know, you can custom create your little blouses or your little case for your little iPhone. You have an actual iPhone, your character does. It's so detailed to the point where some more gamers might want, like, a faster pace kind of experience. But it's a really great game to play when you're just stressed out in the real world. That's my go-to to just relax.
It sounds like some serious escapism.
It is. It is.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Kenny, let me ask you, what does it look like when you're playing? Because I'm still, I can't visualize what you're saying here. It's like, so, is it isometric? Is it over the top? Is it, like visually, what am I looking at? Is it pixel art? Like,
no, not pixel art. I don't know how to describe quite the art style. I think of more kind of a chibi eyes, very kind of cutesy, more simplistic design to the character. So, like, your character has arms and hands, but, like, their hands are just kind of like a circle, like, at the end of the arms. Okay. You know, the little triangle noses. So, things like that. So, more of a simplistic art style. The game you play is your character runs around, and the way the screen kind of moves is you'll kind of follow your character, but the world is almost kind of rounded so you can, like, look over the horizon.
Okay.
If that makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
the scope of the game is pretty small because you're restricted to the island.
Okay.
That you have. So you're, I don't know, on this play land doesn't take very long to go back and forth. But the whole kind of point of the game is to kind of connect to something that you create for yourself. And connecting with your villagers and your animal friends and becoming better and getting to know them better. The more you get to know them, the more you see little personality quirks from each of them. And decide, like, oh, I want you to stay here with me forever. Or, you can leave me now. I want someone new to come
with you. You can banish people from the island.
Sort of. They can ask to move out. Either because you've chosen to kind of, you want them gone, so you can kind of ignore them. And there's a way to do that, that they'll move out. Or once you become best friends with them, they'll actually say, hey, I love living here, but I think I want something new to experience. And you can then make the decision whether you would like them to stay. You can tell them, hey, I love you, stay here with me. Or I wish you a good life. And they'll move out in a couple days.
Wow.
And then you can choose to invite someone, or if you just leave their house plot open, someone will automatically move in. But it's about connecting and building something that you want to. So the more you put into the game and the more time and effort, the more results you're going to see. So you have this pretty barren island, and you can do all sorts of things. This is the first time in an Animal Crossing game where you can terraform your land. So you can actually build, like, waterways and ridges, and you can go up several stories.
Holy cow.
So you can completely design your island. So maybe you want, like, a traditional Japanese-themed island. You can get, like, fencing and construction items and, like, furniture items to decorate that would fit that style. But you could also do something much more modern or very simplistic.
So let me ask you then, since there seems to be so much customization,
yes.
is it all just... Are you unlocking all these things as you go, depending upon, like she said, you know, Vanessa, you talk about like the flimsy ask,
yes.
That can only get you a specific material that you would need to get. So,
yes.
so
it's kind of Minecrafty in
okay.
that sense.
Yeah.
Like
right.
you don't have all these options open all at once, because that would just be way too overwhelming.
That's what I'm wondering.
Like
about
I would be like, what the heck do I do? No,
yeah.
No, they take you like baby steps through the quest line process. So like. If you help... and by the way, you have a mortgage to pay, too.
Yeah.
With bells.
Yes.
So Tom Nooks, he's kind of like the hostess, kind of... He's a raccoon, and...
Tom Nooks the raccoon.
Nooky.
Careful.
Careful with raccoon.
Oh, okay. Anyway, yes, he's pretty greedy, but he tries to cover it up, plays all nice, but I think he's pretty greedy deep down. But,
yeah.
Nobody trusts raccoons. They get in your garbage. They make messes in my campsite.
He gives
anyway.
You a loan to build yes. your house, but it's...
There's no interest. No
so
interest.
He'll tell you
that's
your
good.
Loan's $1,000 and you only have to pay the $1,000.
Yes. That is a good honest thing on him. But or you can repay it miles. You earn miles too by doing like quests, doing fishing, doing like quests here and there to unlock miles, and miles unlocks other cool stuff that you can't make on the island. Like I was scrolling through one of the options, there's like a You can buy like a big satellite I saw like option. It's crazy. But no, like even a giant red robot I saw, and there was like 5,000 miles or something. But it gets pretty crazy. Like what was I saying?
Satellites.
yeah.
Robots.
Satellites.
Things in space.
So they're like big decoration items.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So the customization just sounds deep, and it does sound like this is, like, that kind of game that I don't know if I'm just, I need direction in my life, but it feels like what you're explaining to me is they give you a series of quests that are essentially tutorials to do whatever it
yes.
is you want in this world. So they're very much like, hey, gamer, make your own game, and whatever it is you want to do, go forth and do that.
Yeah.
Couple questions. Does everybody start on the same island? Are they procedurally generated? Like, how does that...
Sort of. So when you load up the game, it'll give you kind of an option of a few different island setups you can choose from. The only real difference is they're always kind of this, like, rectangle shape, but it'll kind of depend what you want to choose. The really only thing you can't change on your island is where the river mouths are and where kind of the beach and the rock formations are. So you'd want to pick an island that... So you always have two river mouths, and those are always permanent. So you can change the way the direction of the water goes and things like that on the island. So when you pick an island, you maybe kind of want to envision what you want to do with it and then pick the features that best suits that.
Now, I'm kind of greedy.
Mm-hmm.
What if I want multiple islands?
You know what? That is a very excellent question, Garrett, and I cannot answer it because I don't even know if I've gone that far yet into that game. to have multiple islands. I know that I'm at the point where I can go to the airplane. There's a little airplane dock, mm-hmm. and you can visit other players' islands online. You can even go to different randomly generated islands to get resources. You also need a lot of resources, like Minecraft, again, playing that element. Like, it took me a while, but to figure out that you need iron ore to make certain tools.
Okay.
So you go to these generated islands and get all these resources and bring them back to your main island.
Are those are some resources just straight up not available on your island? Is it mandatory to travel to these places?
Yes and no. Okay, so I made the mistake. So anybody that's about to play Animal Crossing, this is a very valuable advice and tip because I learned the hard way. And I had to look it up because I was at a loss. I was like, what am I doing wrong here? And I don't know if you ran into this same problem, Kenny, but I definitely, you start off on your island, you have several of these rocks formations. Mm-hmm. And I figured out, I can hit them and stuff comes out of it. Like, you get clay, you get stone, and you get iron ore. And sometimes, if you're lucky, you get gold ingots or gold ore. Anyway, I made the mistake of, like, you have these trees, you can eat oranges or whatever fruits that's on your island, you can eat up to 10 oranges, and then you get, like, superhuman strength, basically.
Okay. One does.
Yes. So I made the mistake of eating a bunch of oranges, and then I went to hit the rock. Well, guess what happened? The rock exploded into a million pieces, and I couldn't get any more ores from it.
Oh, so it just vanished.
It vanished off my island.
Therefore, you could not get any more resources from
Therefore, I couldn't get any more iron ingots to proceed into the next quest. I was like, where are they? You know, I was freaking out. I was like, how do I get more iron ore? Finally, I looked up, it's like, you're not supposed to eat oranges. You're supposed to just tap it, like, multiple times, and it comes out.
Oh, no.
So for a while there, I had to go to different islands, get ore, until eventually on my island, the rocks responded.
Next question. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to Roberto's island.
Yes.
I'm taking all of his stuff. What is preventing me from taking all of his stuff? Just because I want to be a jerk. Because I know he likes this rock formation. I'm going to eat a bunch of oranges. I'm going to go over there and I'm going to destroy his stuff. Is there like a...
You're not going to get oranges off my island. You're getting peaches. There's a difference.
Okay.
Berto says this like he has an island. He doesn't.
No. She wants to use my Switch so she can have another island.
Oh my God.
So to backtrack a little bit to what Garrett asked earlier about having multiple islands.
Okay.
So the only way to have a separate island is to have a separate Switch with a separate copy of the game.
You can't make two islands.
You can't on the same game.
Ooh, that's kind of evil.
What happens is if you have multiple people on your Switch console who want to play, is you all live on the same island together. So you just choose to have your own house and do your own thing, but you live on the same island.
Okay.
I can attest to that because Brandon, he wanted to start his own file, and I thought, he'll have his own island. Wrong. He started on my island, and he started with his 10. I was like, I guess we're neighbors now. So he's on my island, you know, we're actual literally neighbors, and he has his own house now.
I think his tent. Yeah. So did you have like a mansion and your husband was living in a tent? That's great. Yes. You're like, sorry, honey, you get the tent.
But as far as
when you're mad at him, you just say like you're sleeping in the tent.
Yeah, you're sleeping.
Go to your tent. Yeah.
No, he went into my house and was like, what's this? He was like, hey, stop touching that.
He's going through all your things.
All my things.
I'm sure as you can imagine, though, if you are playing on the same Switch, you can't play at the same time.
Right.
Which is the downside. The only experience I have playing the kind of multiplayer visiting someone else's, like go to my mom and my brother's island every once in a while. I've never tried to ransack their island other than what my brothers told me I could take.
Yeah, you're a good sibling.
But I do know that there is some complaints from other players who do a lot of that there's supposed to be some restrictions. So when you have people visiting your island, you can limit what that person does. So you have a friends list and you can set people as your best friends. And I believe best friends always kind of can do whatever they want on the island, but you can set other restrictions, but they're not very broad. So someone could come in and potentially chop down your trees or steal your fruit and flowers. Like, it's a possibility. So just remember to play with people you trust. I know there's a trick that if you have someone on your island and they are causing mayhem, maybe you just had some random person stop by because you just put your code out and wanted to play with people. I believe if you press the minus button, it'll actually kick everyone off because it'll kind of reset the island.
Okay.
So this is also a good thing because you can do it, basically connect with people online and do trades. So you'll go to their island, leave an item, and take either money bell or item payment. And people will try to scam you by stealing your item and not giving you anything in return. So what I've seen people post is if you press that minus button, you can basically kick them out and still retain your stuff.
Wow.
You gotta be careful out there. If you're gonna invite strangers, you gotta make sure You're not inviting all these shady people out there online. That's like why I don't give out. Yeah.
Embezzlement?
Yeah.
This sounds like deeper. Animal Crossing seems like life.
So there's a big, so it's all about, like, if there's certain items or certain crafting recipes that you want, because you only can find them every so often, that you can choose. There's things like Nook is on online, where you can actually see players that are selling for, like, in-game currency. So they'll either be like, I want a million bells for this item that maybe you can't get. So you can, like, put in, like, a bid or, like, an offer, and they can offer to go to your island and trade you for that item or resource. There's also a way where you can kind of trade villager, not trade them, but, like, if you have an empty house and someone has a villager that's moving out of their island, and maybe it's a villager you really like, you can go to that island and then invite them to come live on your island if they're already planning to move out of where they were. So there's a big online currency exchange going on with players traveling to each other's islands to exchange items.
That's amazing. It really is.
Sorry, like, we could go on and on, but, like, this is what I'm really, really, like, excited about the game. Like, besides the customization, it's the museum where I feel that the game, the heart is of the game. It's the museum. And you collect bugs, you collect fish, and you collect, eventually you collect, art museums, like, actual art pieces. Like, the other day I got scammed by a fox who I thought I was buying the actual Mona Lisa. Turns out, no, it was a fake.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, like, it goes pretty deep, like, into the collection buildings. It's even, like, you have a little catalog book in your little phone where once you collect a certain species of bug or fish, you can look it up the time of day you caught it, and a full-blown picture of an actual, like, super detailed anatomy of the insect.
Wow.
And what's amazing is, like, I, you know, at first I was like, oh, okay, yeah, museum, collect bugs, whatever, right? But it's really satisfying because once you build up the museum and you walk into everything that you collected along all these days, months, years that you played the game, Garrett, like, I don't know how to describe it, but, like, the museum is, like, you're there. Like, if I were to go to a museum, I would pay to go into the Animal Crossing Museum. It's amazing.
Super impressive.
And fossils. Yeah. Fossils, too. Oh, my God. Boy.
They got the fossils.
Dude, it's amazing. The graphics, they put so much detail into the fossils. Like, you're like, it's like, I'm excited just to go to a museum now because of that game.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
So does it go into another screen when it's showing this kind of detail? It takes you out of the game world and...
So you go into the museum building.
Mm-hmm.
You see the owl, and he's like, points you in all these different directions.
The owl runs the museum?
Yes.
Of course
he does. His name is Blathers.
Does he say who when you walk in?
Hoot hoot, yeah, hoot.
Does he really?
Does he? He does.
I just totally guessed that.
If he's asleep, I think. But he's in there all the time. But no, yeah, like, you if you go to the dinosaur exhibit, like... It's based on actual, like, it's not, like, made up.
Sure.
It's, like, all legit.
They did their homework. They did their homework, as far as the developers
yes. And, like, it's, like, you're there, and I don't know how else to describe it without you, like, fully, like, making a character and going into a completed museum, but, like, all of the days of hard work really shows off. Like, all your dedication of finding that one tiny little insect or finding that huge, like, saber-toothed tiger, like... You're there and you're seeing it, you know?
Yes. It's awesome.
And to point out about the museum, so the museum is actually a feature that has been in the game since the original Animal Crossing, at least when we got in the US, which was on GameCube. And the museum is where you really shine and see your progress through the game. Because unless you're skipping days and time traveling, the museum will probably take you at least a full year to get almost all the bugs and fish that you need to complete it. So walking in each time and seeing the progress you made. So I actually just finished my fossil exhibit. I have every fossil in the game. Nice. I just got really lucky this time.
Okay.
But I struggle with, I have one painting in my museum because the character that needs to show up for me to get an authentic painting shown up twice for me since he was introduced, Red, who was introduced back into the game.
Is that all randomly generated?
Yeah, so different days on different islands, you have special characters who come and do things. So there's, like, a bug specialist and a fishing one that'll give you a better price than you would get at the shops for your bugs and fish.
Got it.
There's Red, who's, like, the black market. So you go on his, like, creepy ship at the back of your island. he sells art, and so the art can either be all fake, all real, or, like, a combination of both. So it'll be four art pieces, and you have to, like, look up the details to see if they match the real life, the pieces in real life. And if they're fake, Blathers will tell you, this is counterfeit. And you actually can't even sell counterfeit. Right. So if you have it, right. You either can put it in trash can, or you're stuck with it forever.
Wow. I ended up hanging it in my house, because I...
Yeah, because you're supposed to do that.
Yeah, sure, nobody will know. You'd have some guests over, yeah. You can say, you know, fun, you know, story about how you got scammed.
But finishing the museum is always a big accomplishment because it does take so long, and it's kind of the best, like, marker of the progress you've made. And this one's so special. I think you were talking about it. It doesn't quite zoom in, but you'll go through certain exhibits, and if you stand still, it'll kind of zoom in or zoom out to show you kind of, like, the broad scale. Or there's, like, special spaces you can stand. Like, there'll be, like, a giant shark tank, and if you stand right in front of it, it'll kind of, like, zoom so you kind of look up and can see, like, the fish and the sharks, like, swimming around in it.
Very neat. So you're, like, at that point taking a virtual tour almost of everything that you've collected.
It's so calming, like, when you see the... And I recently caught a hammerhead shark, by the way. That was a surprise, so I, like, instantly ran into the museum, like, bothers. So I finally, so I could stand there, and, like, you see the hammer, just, like, like, super realistic, like, and you're, like, in the museum, you know.
So, how many hours have you put into it, Vanessa?
God, I have no idea, like...
Kenny?
I don't know. Probably not as much as I thought I was going to. I played it pretty obsessively, like, when it first came out, and I've kind of tapered off. I do kind of, like, a few daily tasks every day now. One of the things that I don't like about the game is it gives you so much... This is the first Animal Crossing where you can really, like, terraform and choose where you want your villagers to live and, like, really make the island exactly what you want. But the tools to do that take so long to use that it becomes so tedious to want to do it. So I'll do, like, a small section of my island at a time, and it takes me an hour. So I just kind of give up for that day and, like, okay, I'll do a little more. So progress on my island has been pretty slow. But you look at people, you can look up on YouTube and just see the amazing things that, like, people have created. And I know people have spent hundreds and hundreds of hours. I would probably say at this point maybe 50, 60 is kind of where I'm sitting at with the game.
Okay.
But because I've been playing, like, The Last of Us, I haven't been playing as... Last of Us 2, I haven't been playing as much of it. But I still log in every day and kind of do a few daily tasks.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a game like this, obviously, they can continue to support. There's always going to be a holiday coming up. They might be doing something for 4th of July and every other holiday that's coming up after it. So I think that that's going to be kind of an easy way for them to add things and get people to continue to collect things for their museum and to keep people engaged. Wow. What a thing. What a thing Animal Crossing is. It's one of those things that, like, I guess I will just never know, because I feel like just listening to you to speak about it, for one, I'd have to purchase a Nintendo Switch, which I'm just not going to do. But,
so worth it, though, but...
I just don't know if I have time for this in my life right now.
It's a chill game.
Truthfully, I don't think it would be your kind of game, though.
Okay, and so we haven't heard from you for a minute, Roberto. and before we move off Animal Crossing, you have tried it.
I have. Well, I haven't tried this one.
You tried New
I got... Oh, okay. Bullied and peer pressured by coworkers that I was still working at GameStop with to pick up that game when it first came out on the 3DS. And, you know, I get it. I see why people like it. I can, you know, I can see why people are putting many hours into the game. I see the appeal. It's just not my kind of thing. It's too relaxing to the point that I've actually fallen asleep playing this game because it was just too relaxing. It's not because, you know, it was boring. It was just, it was, I need toxicity. I need, you know, my heart pumping 2 to 3 times more blood than it's supposed to. And, you know, I need people to insult me to actually be able to play a game.
So I think that's a good point to bring up too. Animal Crossing does something that a lot of most basic, like, even like Harvest Moon and stuff doesn't do, which is that it's always a positive experience. There's nothing sad that's gonna happen in the game. So
you do not fail.
You can't fail, and it's not like Harvest Moon where your animals can pass away. Like, there's sad, somber moments in it. Animal Crossing, you'll always pick it up and always have a positive experience with the game. And especially with the climate in the world and the game coming out right in the kind of middle of everything happening right now. And I think that's why people have put so much time and effort into the game, is having just, like, a piece of your day where you can just sit down, relax, and not have to worry about the outside world or even anything drastic happening inside your world in the game.
Right. And that's what I was saying about escapism.
From what I've seen, and this is from just my experience with the game, the worst things that can happen in that game for you is there is a lot of weeds in your island.
Yes.
Or because you haven't paid attention to your island for so long, some of your friends leave. But they give you
I haven't actually looked at this yet. So in the past games, from like New Leaf and back, if you didn't log on, your animals would sometimes just move out, and you'd log on and you'd have new people who you didn't know living there. Your favorite may have moved out. this game, I haven't had anyone, like, even if I haven't played for a couple days, like, say they're moving out before it's too late. Everyone's always asked. I don't know if you have experience with someone just, like, leaving randomly, but I don't know if that actually is
I have not.
Available in this game.
I think the most I've gone without playing it was 3 days straight, and when I logged back in, they were just like, oh my god, you're back! I'm super excited that you're back, you know? Like, this is, you know, and they give me a gift, you know? They're like, please stay, you know?
So I don't
know. They were sad that you were gone.
They were sad that I was missing.
Yeah, so I don't know in this game if, like, it's player directive, so a lot of people get sad because you might spend a lot of time trying to find your favorite villager to come live on your land, right? And if they just moved out randomly, it's, like, really upsetting. Especially, like, in the original Animal Crossing, a lot of times they didn't give you a choice. They were just like, I'm moving, bye.
Oh.
And you were just like, no. And, like, at that point, once they say that, like, you can't even restart the game to make them stay.
Oh.
So I think in this game, at least from my experience, is that it doesn't look like they move out without prompting. So the character will prompt you to say yes or no. So it's a little less risky if you're spending a lot of time finding an animal that you really want to live on your island. You're not going to lose them randomly. At least as far as I know and what I've seen, that seems to be the way it is. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, just it seems like the perfect storm, the perfect game at the perfect time. Like you said, COVID's happening.
COVID, a lot of the protests.
For sure. Like, what on. Not a better time than to just forget that. And maybe not forget, but just be able to wrap your mind around something positive, mm-hmm. around something that brings you joy. And
it's like Nintendo knew this was going to happen.
I know. It came out at the right time, right?
All those delays are on purpose. Oh, they knew.
I hope not, because that means Nintendo is more nefarious than I thought. Right? Because, oh, man, that's crazy.
It's, honest to God, like, a place you go to if you had such a shitty-ass day at work or wherever you are, and you just want to escape and be happy and find yourself, you know, go fishing out on the ocean, you know. It's like you see a beautiful sunset, you just stay. Like, I just found myself just staring at my character off into the ocean, just staring, because, you know, I couldn't physically go to the ocean myself. Like, that was a way of me coping to, like, just escape, you know.
Yes.
It's rad.
Also, I think it's a great game that if you've never played a video game before, or maybe you were interested but just not sure it's kind of your thing, this is like a game anyone can pick up, anyone can play. There's never a mistake you make in the game that can't be rectified really easily. So there's, like, no risk to playing the game. So if, like, playing video games maybe makes you nervous, like, you're never in a time crunch, it's never going to give you, like, unless you're playing hide and seek with the little villagers around the island. There's never, like, a countdown timer. There's never really a deadline except for special events, and normally they last for, like, a full day, so you can play from, like, midnight to midnight, or for, like, weeks or a month at a time. So I think it's a great game for anyone who may be interested in it, just to pick it up and play. And even for young kids, it's a really accessible game.
That's awesome. Well, there's no way for me to possibly shift into this next possible subject. I'm talking about games that are not easily acceptable, or accessible, I should say.
Yeah.
The Last of Us 2. Wow, what a game, right? So Kenny and I have played it quite a bit. We're pretty close as far as where we are game-wise. Just a heads up if you're listening, because I know, obviously, with an extremely narrative game like this, obviously spoilers are a big concern. We talked about it before the podcast, a little inside baseball here, and we're not going to be going into any story spoilers. However, you know, when talking about video games, it's kind of sometimes hard to tiptoe around specific details. And what I'll say about that is, if you want to know absolutely nothing about The Last of Us 2, maybe now would be the time to shut the podcast off and come back when you are done with the game. Saying that, you know, I just want to start by saying I finished The Last of Us Remastered and immediately jumped in to this game. And like I said before, I think that that was probably one of the best decisions I've done as far as playing games in a while, because, you know, it literally does kind of throw you right back into that world, into these people's lives, and wow. All I can say is that, you know, playing The Last of Us Remastered, as a father, I really related to Joel this second time around, because you're seeing it through not his eyes, but you are very much, because you are controlling Joel, because you are very much going along this journey with this young girl who's very defenseless. You have to look at it as a parental figure. There's just no other way around it. And obviously, for spoiler reasons I won't discuss, the decisions he makes along that road are justified in my eyes, whether or not you believe they were wrong or not. In this game, it's funny because I'm looking at it as a son to a parent. And for multiple different reasons, you obviously play as Ellie. That's not a spoiler. That's all been all over the place media-wise. And now it's weird. It's almost like Neil Druckmann, the director, wanted to take it from an opposite side. Like, narratively, he's like, well, now you're playing as the child doing things for their parent like the parent once did for you.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get into the story, we're going to be talking about some of the weird stuff that's been going on. Basically, the reviews versus your critics. What people have been saying out there on forums and blogs versus what your major outlets like IGN and Game Informer and all these major other massive outlets have been saying. Kenny, what do you think about it?
Yeah, so I think before the game came out, you had all your big review outlets coming out and really giving this game, like, masterpiece status. Like, mm-hmm. This game is the original game elevated. Like, this is the perfect note in the PS4. Like, I think they almost built up the expectations for this game too much for players. So when players started playing the game, and very early on, there's some story and character decisions that were made, that a lot of players were very unsatisfied with. And even from, like, players who hadn't finished the game was almost a affront to them. It made them angry, because of those decisions that the developers decided to make. And so there was a lot of review bombing coming out as soon as the game was out and people were playing it. They're like, what is this? This is awful. How could you do this? So I'm enjoying the game. I think we've talked about this where we decided we're about halfway through the narrative story. Both Garrett and I, he's a little farther than I am. There was some, without spoiling it, some very strange character choices, I feel like, that were made very early on in the game. That even for someone who didn't play... So I've actually never played The Last of Us. I had originally watched someone else play because I didn't have access to the game at the time. And I didn't replay it before. I probably should have, but I'm kind of glad I didn't. Because I think it put me a little bit more distant from the story, even though I remember it very well, from the characters. And so reading what some people were saying, I can understand why people, reviewers, are so upset about what have happened. And the more I think about it, it just kind of comes down to, I think, partially a failure on the writing team. And the final story that they put out there. I've heard from some people that they feel better towards the end of the game. I've read things that say that it didn't matter, the game was ruined for them, and the story made it worse towards the end. So it was just, like, a weird thing that why were so many outlets coming out saying, oh, this game's a masterpiece, versus when people picked up the game, they're like, hey, there's a lot of problems here, and you're not addressing any of it.
Yeah, I think, okay, I've got a lot of thoughts about this.
Yeah.
For one, okay, you got to think back to when The Last of Us Remastered came out. Here was this studio, Naughty Dog, responsible for some of the biggest, if not the biggest, AAA games on the planet. The Uncharted series, I mean, especially Uncharted 4 prior to The Last of Us 2, was the fastest selling exclusive of all time. So already, they've got all eyes on them, right? It's not like we're going into The Last of Us 2 expecting nothing. But once again, back when they released The Last of Us, prior to that release, not a lot of people knew what that game was. Yes, we knew it was post-apocalyptic. Yes, we knew mm-hmm. we were playing, as this guy who was, you know, escorting this, you know, young lady across the country. But we didn't know the context. And then we got the narrative. We got the voice acting by Ashley Johnson, Troy Baker, and it's the best performance, or one of the best performances. I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting hyperbolic, but you know what I'm saying. Like, an amazing experience narratively, and everybody, the whole entire world is blown away, going, oh my god, video games could be so much more. And then here we are, The Last of Us 2. This has happened in media across all platforms. You're Metallica, right? You release the Black Album. Everybody loves you. Or sorry, let's go even further back. Master of Puppets and Justice for All. You have this sound and you are amazing. You try something slightly different and all of a sudden the fans hate you. You see, the thing about Uber fans is they are a passionate about hate as much as they are love. They want you to do the same thing again, but change things, but the way that they want you to change them. And a good example of this is like the ending of Mass Effect 3 that was originally like ended up being altered because of fans. And I cannot stand by the thought that because some people didn't like narrative decisions that Neil Druckmann made, who is probably one of the best directors in video games, let the artist make the game. Like, let them drive it forward. Just because you don't agree with, like, narrative decisions that were made along the way doesn't give you the right to just review bomb. That's crazy to me. And yeah, sure, you can, but it makes you a dick. Like, straightforward. Like, I have no other way to say it. I've got zero tolerance for that. You know, just being somewhat of an artist in my life, I feel like I should have the freedom to make these decisions. And, you know, I don't know what else to say other than that. I think that, you know, that there, of course, there's... It's one of those things where when you make a piece of art and somebody expects you to one-up, all you can do is what's in your heart and make some changes that you feel would be right. And at the end of the day, you're going to make some people upset. But I really, for me personally, so far, I'm loving every step of the way. Talking about the story, let's just jump right on into that. How do you feel about where it's going?
I like the direction it's going.
Okay.
I will say, I personally have some strong thoughts, and I think when we do a spoiler cast and we eventually finish the game and come back to talk about it, we can talk more about... I'm sure people who've played it know kind of what happens towards the beginning of the game. I think that there was mistakes made in the writing that I think made a weaker story and weaker character motivations than they could have been. And that was... Not that I'm not enjoying the game. I immensely am, but it was a little disappointing, and kind of the more I sit and think about it, the more it's just kind of like, man, they just kind of missed the ball for me slightly. And I think we'll talk about the characters a little bit in a moment, but there's a story beat in the story where, in my opinion, a character does something so out of character compared to how we know them from the previous title that it really just kind of stuck out to me as, like, a real sore thumb.
Okay.
That, like, even though I'm enjoying the game and the story, that it just, I always come back to that moment, like, man, like, why did they make that choice? Because it doesn't seem like something the character would do.
We're going to have to talk after this because I'm curious about what that was.
Yeah, and that action is tied so completely into the whole story. So, like I said, we'll come back to this once we finish playing the game. My opinions might change a little bit, but it was just so strange to me. I like that, I don't know how spoiler this is, you kind of get to start to see things from different perspectives. Even though you play the game as Ellie, but you're starting to see things from different angles that you may have not noticed before. And I think Ellie becoming a much stronger narrative-driven character, because Ellie was such an innocent child. And then going into this game, you're kind of thrown into where she's much older.
Sure.
And she's had more life experience. And her not only going through the story, but reflecting on her childhood and her journey with Joel, which is what's driving the story. But I think the story so far is good. I am interested, based on kind of how I've seen people react towards the end of the game, what my opinions on that would be, just from what people have said. But I'm enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I don't know if I have a whole lot more to say about the story without spoiling anything.
Sure, it's hard to tiptoe around it.
Yeah.
I will say that, you know, for me, I'm enjoying the story as well. However, some of the stuff that has happened along the way has been very, I hate to say it, but predictable. But that's okay. Like, predictable doesn't mean it's bad.
No.
It just means, like, I mean, I couldn't think of another way I would have turned this around. Like, I mean, what are we going to make boring video game of the year? like they could have done different things, but I think the predictable thing is that, you know, guess what? We as humans, we're kind of predictable. You know, and especially under the circumstances in this environment, in this world, with these characters who I already know, basically, from playing the first one.
Yes.
I mean, you get to know what kind of place these people are at mentally, the decisions that are made are predictable. And even some of the ones where they tried to, like, throw me, like, oh, guess what? Here's a curveball. It's like, no, I saw this a million miles away, but it's okay.
I will say, even with the curveballs, I think they do such a good job of, like, expressing human emotion. And the voice acting is, I mean, even from the first game was so good.
Yes.
So that even though when there are those predictable moments, you're still engaged in what's happening.
Yeah.
So you can be like, oh, I saw this coming, but you're like, oh, it's going to happen down. They're like, oh. Oh, but you're so engaged in it that it doesn't detract from the story that you're trying to tell.
I also kind of feel it does some jarring things by kind of making the pace of the game offset to me. I don't want to say, but there's a lot of back and forth. I don't want to say Pulp Fiction-esque, but there's a lot of time jumping, I will say. I don't want to tell you when and where, but you'll be kind of thrown in and out of memories in a way that's kind of like, oh, well, wait, no, I don't want to do this now. I kind of just want to push forward to the story. Like, I don't know if I needed to see this almost.
Yeah.
You know?
I will say kind of against that point, I think it's really jarring the first time it happens.
Yeah.
Because it kind of just comes out of nowhere and you're kind of just like, wait, what?
Yeah, there's some pacing.
But I think those moments are so important to the game. And at least at the point where you are now, because it allows you to see things from a completely different you know, you're seeing it through Ellie's eyes versus Joel's. And seeing a completely different version of almost story than you did before and realizing how these things affected Ellie. Because you don't really see a whole lot of that in the first game. And I think we'll maybe kind of move into the character side. I love Ellie in this game. She acts like a real teenager. And as someone who was a teenage girl, it is really impressive to me. The way she kind of acts or tries to figure things out, I really appreciate. And I really like her as the main character in this game. And I've seen some people don't necessarily like that, I think, because they're so attached to Joel. But I like seeing her growth and how she's grown and from the information she knows and what she's still trying to figure out from what has gone for her entire life.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
I was really shocked. I actually really enjoyed a lot of the characters they just kind of introduce you to that were not actually in The Last of Us Remastered. And I don't want to speak too much on them. But once again, Neil Druckmann took some risks with these characters. These characters aren't your by the book, meaning maybe different religions, races, beliefs, very all over the place in a way that just... it seems natural and in place. These people aren't larger than life. They all have flaws. They all have personalities in a way that's, oh man, it's just so real. I can't think of another game that has a cast of characters where I kind of don't like any of them because they're not all of them are kind of bad people. And at the end of the day, we all kind of suck in some kind of way. And I think that they're able to, like, really highlight, like, man, these people may mean well, but everybody is terrible. There's not a good or bad character in this game, talking about characters. Yeah. I think everyone is flawed. And it really just, it constantly beats you down with this, why are we, or them, or... anything, why is it all even happening anymore? Because there's just so much loss, and I think that all these characters have just so much just hate and anger and depression, and it's just unbelievable that, like, they're even alive in this world.
And, like, the game really forces you, because it's not you playing as the player. You're playing as Ellie, right? So the game will force you to do things you as the player don't want to do. You know the decision's a bad decision to make, but you have to press the button because you're the player playing Ellie. And so it forces you to kind of see things through other perspectives that you may not have, even if you really disagree with that decision. There's no other way to do it.
Sure, you're not role-playing this.
Yeah. I will say, I know we're kind of running late on time, but my favorite thing about the game, and I think the single most impressive thing, and I feel like a lot of people may have missed some of this because they're just so rushed to get through it, is the world building in this game is some of the best I've ever seen. I mean, there's issues, I think, with the story and characters, but, like, just, like, the little things, like, walking through people's, like, abandoned houses and seeing family photos, finding notes that as they were, you know, dying, writing to loved ones. Just all these little details, even from, like, you know, we're in these combat zones, like, you know, seeing the bad guys or who you're facing against, finding their dead comrades and reacting to that in a natural way, like, oh my god, Lily, you're dead, or like, hey, I found James over here. And, like, it almost seems like every NPC in the game at least has some sort of programmed name, which is really cool. Like, they talk to each other and respond to each other.
Yeah.
Which is just so impressive, and I found myself, like, a lot of, like, the calm moments of the game, where you can spend time just, like, looking around. I looked for every nook and cranny I can. Me too. Because there's just so much, like, little details. And, like,
it's environmental world building.
It's so amazing. And, like, sometimes I'm just at awe. It's a beautiful game. I think everyone who's played it and maybe hates the story and everything, it's one of the most beautiful games you'll ever look at.
Yeah.
Seattle is beautiful.
Oh, yes.
It's just so amazing how much detail and kind of just structure that they put there. And I can imagine it was probably a team of people's job just to sit there and put family portraits and, like, little details here and there.
Right.
That I just think are just so impressive. And I don't see a lot of people talking about it.
Sure.
But I'm just, like, I'm just so at awe of that amount of detail that was put into the game, and I think it's just wonderful to see that.
I meant environmental storytelling.
Yeah.
Because not everything is just spelled out for you. You walk into a room, you can kind of see something has happened here, you find a note, oh, this is what happened, and then you start looking around, and you're like, oh, this is what happened. Oh, man. And, like, even the way she reacts after reading a note, she audibly, like, is exhausted. She'll read a note and go, oh, my God.
And, like, sometimes,
And just hearing her say it, and after you reading it, it's, like, it's giving me chills right now. And because some of the stuff that you find just walking through this world is, once again, it's, like, why even keep going, you know? Gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the first one, very linear. Combat was extremely basic. I don't think that that's what they were going for in this at all, because it is a lot better. There are a lot of more open spaces. I will never say this is open world, but there are large spaces with multiple ways to get through these spaces. And a lot of it is almost a puzzle game, in that there are these enemies who have different sort of routes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were saying what's really impressive. I think that there's a starting route, but what's really neat about it is they are intelligent in a way that I haven't seen many games do. So the AI, once again, they all have names, they all have personalities, they all speak together like they've been living together for years and years and years, but they will hunt you to death. A lot of games do this kind of a thing, especially stealth games. You get spotted. If you go hide, literally that character will walk around for 2 minutes and go, I guess it was nothing, and then, like, walk away, right? Back to its normal route. These people will hunt you relentlessly in a way that is creepy. There's multiple different kind of enemy types as well, on the zombie side and the human side. I don't want to spoil that, because you'll find out along the way who these people are, but I have never felt fear in some of the sections in these games. I probably have felt fear like this before, but it's right on up there with one of the most anxiety-inducing feelings. Oh, Dark Souls was worse. What am I talking about? But I'm not going to go down that now.
I think that the audio plays a really big part. And this does. I never played the first game through myself, so I don't know. I don't know how well the first game did this. But from the creatures and the human enemies, you think you're kind of safe, but then you'll hear, like, a branch snap behind you, and it may have just been a bird in the background.
You don't know.
You don't know. And as you get farther, the enemies, I feel like, get more intelligent. So the game does a good job of, like, starting you off softball, and as you continue, like, even the humans and the monsters seem, the AI gets smarter. It forces you to play better and more strategic as you go on. I'll make a point, because one of the things you said, the game definitely isn't open world. I felt the game so far is a little too linear in the paths you have to take, at least from my perspective. I think one of the poor decisions the game made was when you first arrive to kind of, like, your big, you've done the start of the game, kind of the intro to everything. So you get to Seattle, right? Everyone gets kind of where you end up. They give you this section of this game that's much more open and accessible, and you kind of get used to, like, exploring and creeping around and finding these different areas, and then the game takes you and forces you to kind of go down one path.
Right.
And it becomes very obvious. You're like, oh, man, I'm going to go over here because I know there's probably something, like, cool, hidden, like, collectible.
Sure.
But, like, I know I'm not going to be able to go this way.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's getting worse and worse for me as I play through, that it's more constrictive on where you can go. There are these kind of more battlefield scenarios you kind of end up in where it is kind of like a puzzle trying to figure out what path goes what way, but not necessarily so difficult that you would get lost.
Sure.
You can still figure out where to go fairly easily, or it'll tell, like, each little section, like, okay, there's your marker, or, like, you know, you can see the marker off in the distance, so you kind of know what direction to go to. And I think I almost wish the game was a little more open and a little more freeing, because it started out being like, okay, cool, you're gonna be explore chunks at a time, and then it kind of becomes, okay, you have to walk down this way, and this is blocked off, so you got to continue this way. So it does lose some of that openness that I thought was so impressive in the beginning.
Sure.
But I found that it's been a little frustrating, and the more I go on, the more enclosed it seems. I don't know if that was a direct choice to maybe make you feel more like you're stuck and give the player less option and more of Ellie's options. I don't know if that was intentional, but I kind of feel like that was a little bit of a letdown for me.
I think that that's also exactly what most people would complain about the first game. Mm-hmm. is basically, it's crazy about how much of a video game it is. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, like, there are collectibles, spoilers. There are press triangle to go through tiny hole, yes, to shiver your way through so that the game can actually load up these new areas. Hold X to drag thing over to area so that, yeah, you can get up on ledge.
Always drag a trash can. If there's a wheel trash can, yes, always it goes
and,
somewhere.
And yeah, so it does get very video gamey. And I think the problem is also, you know, the length of the game. It's kind of well known now. The game's pretty long. And I think that that can kind of get kind of daunting after a while, because you're like, you just kind of want to get to the next story beat, you know, because you kind of feel like, at least I feel now after 15 to 16 hours in the game, mm-hmm, I feel narratively invested. Like, if I was to walk away now and not know, that would be very disheartening. I need to know.
Oh, see,
I need,
like,
to know
how I want to spend time. I want to be able to, like, dig through things and see all the work.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I think from the beginning of the game, I think maybe the game was supposed to be on a bigger scope,
sure,
than it ended up being. And maybe
you think
just
they ran out of time?
I think maybe time constraints, or they decided that there was other resources they'd rather focus on.
Sure.
But from the start of the game, it does feel like this game was supposed to be on a larger scale, as far as, like, being more open and explorative than it ends up being. And there's even, like, things where you walk through certain buildings and you're like, I should be able to go there. And you can tell there was, like, items or things that, like, could have been there, but they just kind of throw something in the way so you can't get through it.
Yeah.
Or you're just like, dude, you could jump over that.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I'm going to give Kenny a high five. There's so many stairwells where it's like, oh, okay, okay, girl, you're on a roof, jumping off, catching a rope, swinging over, landing on a van to get some canned fish, but you can't freaking move a couch that's blocking
the
stairway
out of the way.
Like that kind of stuff is okay, infuriating me. And I think that's also going back to what I said about how much of a video game it is.
Yeah.
They put up these invisible blocks and barriers, and unfortunately, because of awesome games like Breath of the Wild, or, you know, all these other titles which allow you to go anywhere and do anything, you know, we've kind,
yes,
of come to expect, like, specific things. But also too, like, I get it. Like, I don't think that that's, you know, I'm willing to forgive and forget those small things, because I do believe that, you know, this story is something special. And even though, wrapping it all up, even though I think that the story may be predictive in some kind of ways or predictable, I do believe it's special. I do believe,
yeah,
it's special. I mean, what do you feel? One other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when walking away from The Last of Us 2,
mm-hmm,
my biggest question is, do you want this to be it? Do you think that Naughty Dog should make a third game? Because I've been thinking about this a lot. Because going,
mm-hmm,
into the sequel, I gotta say, I wasn't sold on there needing to be a sequel. Because, like I said at the beginning of all this, I think,
mm-hmm,
the intro of The Last of Us Remastered and the ending of The Last of Us Remastered is some of the best work of media, like,
yeah,
ever created. So I don't even know if this game needed to exist, but now I'm playing it. I'm glad it does.
Mm-hmm.
But could you see us going through this again?
I think it's hard. I think the smartest decision they made when making a sequel was making Ellie the main character.
Right.
And I don't, if this game had been Joel, I don't think it would have been worth, I don't think it would have been what it is.
Okay.
Or may have been not worth playing, because, like, you've gone through such an arc with him. So you need someone to focus on, and why not focus on a character you know really well? I think you learn a lot about this game, about the world happening around you. It's not so much what's happening to you, but what's happening to the world. And the game lets you explore this a little bit, about what the other side is, about who else is out there. And I think that if they were going to make another game, I think it would be cool to step away from, I mean, this depends on how the game ends too, of course. Ellie and Joel and their whole faction and where they're from, right? And see the world from other perspectives and maybe other campsites with other people who've escaped and who've managed to live. And I think there's a lot of story you can tell there. I mean, obviously just from like the background characters and finding notes around the place.
Sure.
There's characters that you're like, oh, I want to know more about this person. Like, this person must have had a really interesting story to them. So I think if they were, it'd be smart to kind of step away from Ellie and Joel and do something different, maybe with a different group of people or different characters, even if they maybe crossed paths or knew at some point during the story. But I think it all depends on how the game ends for me, too, and how I'll feel about that. So it's hard to say. I think there's a lot they could do with it, but I think depending on the ending, it's time to step away from the characters that we know.
I personally want them to wrap up this story.
Yes.
Because I don't know if I could do this anymore and still have the same emotional connection, because like I feel like even now being halfway through this, to even send Ellie or any of the characters that are in this game off on another adventure, it's like, no, how about we just kill ourselves? Because like literally, like, that's a depressing thing to say, but like, at what point do these characters run their course? I mean,
you know what, you guys just remember, like, listening to you guys is, oh my god, I want to play, you know, like, and I don't even own a PlayStation, but it's making me want to go buy a PlayStation and buy it. But it just reminded me what you said was, like, it's such this epic long journey with these characters you're so involved in. It reminds me of The Walking Dead, you know, the show when it came out. When it first came out, everybody was really, really invested in it. All of our hearts, I was religiously watching it every time it came out. But, you know, the later episodes, as it dragged on and on and on, I just couldn't physically take it anymore emotionally. Sure. Yeah. Because, yes, I had invested so much in Glenn, so much in Rick, and it got to the point, you know, in the storyline where I just couldn't take it anymore. They kept dragging it on and on, and I stopped watching it.
I agree. You can only wallow in your own freaking misery for so long. Like, it only lasts... I think... Go ahead. No, please.
I think it would be really cool to see them maybe do if they wanted to continue expanding the world. Even, you could almost release, like...
Episodic?
Episodic. That's exactly what I was stories
thinking. Yeah.
That are maybe just like, okay, so we've been in Seattle, we've done all this. Okay, maybe we'll focus on New York City. Or, like, we'll go to these different places, see what's happening, and you follow a short kind of narrative-driven, maybe not even their full life story, just a snippet of their life to see how the world has been affected by this. And be able to see the world that, because the whole world, right, that's all gone. You know, the infected have taken over pretty much everything. And so people that are trying to survive, seeing the all those different factions and where they're located and how they learn to survive and stuff, I think would be really interesting. And I think there's a lot they could do there.
Oh, they could title it The Rest of Us.
There you go!
And they could literally have a collection of, like, I'd say, like...
So, like, an anthology.
Dude, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, and that's... I'm so glad you said that, because when I asked you, I was gonna just say, what if they did it episodic? Because, like, I think that that would fit this world 100% perfectly. You throw down a collection of, like, maybe 8 different people, each 2-hour lengths, you know, something small, bite-sized that you can finish in the evening. I think that would keep me going back as long as... they didn't stay on the same story bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, keep the clickers, keep all the, you know, whatever, the collecting and the crafting and everything that makes The Last of Us The Last of Us. But let's get off these characters, because I don't know how much more I can take with these people.
And I think with the world, that's so interesting. And they've developed it so well that there's so much you could do with
there
it.
There is. And I think one last thought, the Garrett last thought before we end it, is that there are moments in this game that are not depressing, and I think that those moments are what keep me going, which is funny because they're simple moments, and I don't even want to tell you what it is, but there are beautiful moments in this game.
I will put, like, this for any female players out there. One of the reasons that I find Ellie such an interesting character to play as is, like, I see so much of myself when I was younger, and even now in her character, like, she acts like a teenage girl.
Sure.
And it's so fun to see that there's these big highs, and there's these big lows. And as a woman especially, I feel like I connect to her because, like, I recognize those things and I can think of moments in my past that relate so well to how she's feeling. And so I get as big of a high as she does. And I feel as down as she does when these things happen. And, like, even though I'd kind of gotten spoiled on a few things before I picked up the game on accident.
No.
But even those moments that I was spoiled on were just as hard as I think they would have been for me if I hadn't been spoiled for it. So I think it's just so effective in that I connect so well to her as a character. But just a heads up for the female players. Or maybe if you thought about playing it, but thought you couldn't play it, you think it might be interested. Just because of how well I think she is written as a teenage girl, because that's what she is. She's a teenager.
Ashley Johnson does, like, the best bang-up job voice acting.
Oh my god, I love her little side comments. She'll just, sometimes she'll just say things, like, off the cuff. You'll just be, like, walking around, and she'll make a comment on something, and I'm just like, that's so funny. Yeah. Like, you relate to it so much. But I think that's kind of my final thoughts, as far as we are now. And we'd love to do a spoiler cast once we finish
up. Yeah, I think once we actually finish the game, we'll have a better grasp, and we could probably speak more intelligently about the game as a whole, and maybe what you know what we could do that would be even fun, just throwing this out there. I'm just kind of creating this on the fly as people are listening. We could probably just do a list on Roberto's awesome whiteboard that he bought. Mm-hmm. You guys, he's got a whiteboard in the room. We have a whiteboard in here. It's very fancy. We could write down, like, the most important cutscenes and kind of break them down. So that would be, like, a really interesting thing, I think.
I'm down for that.
But anyway, that was episode 10 of the Games with R&D podcast, and boy, that was just the biggest roller coaster. We went Animal Crossing all the way up in the sky and dipped down to the deepest depths, pits of hell in The Last of Us 2. If you're listening to the show, hey, do me a favor. Why don't you tell a friend? Why don't you go ahead and subscribe to us on Apple iTunes and Spotify and YouTube and Anchor and all those other awesome streaming services. You know, I just want to say thank you to Roberto.
Thank you.
Vanessa.
Thanks.
And Kenny.
Hello.
I don't know why I said your name like that.
It's cool.
But hey, we love you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye.